Thank you, David. I got some ideas from the previous two speakers, and there's a lot going on in this particular area. And in fact, we've had a whole bunch of people. You can see all the names at the bottom of people who have worked on it, this project with me at the University of Missouri. And Jim Stever and Alan Ballou are two producers who we've been working with in getting this actually into the field and testing it out and seeing how it's working. And so I'll start off with a little roadmap of where I'm going to go. And the first thing I'm going to talk about is, why would you even think about doing variable rate nitrogen? Because I think you got to have a reason for a technology, and I have some reasons for why I'm interested. I want to get that across. Second, if you're going to do variable rate, why would you do it based on sensors? And again, I've got some reasons that I think are the reason I'm going that direction. And both Randy and Jack mentioned that this thing about how do you interpret the sensor measurements, that's a huge can of worms that's still, it's opened, it's not dumped out yet. There's still a lot of wriggling and figuring to do. But I'll talk about our field scale demos and how those have been going. And I'll finish off with hitting what are some of the obstacles to getting out there and doing this on a farm today. And I think we're getting close to being ready to do this. I don't want anyone to feel like I'm saying, you know, that I'm discouraging going out and doing it quick. I think we're just about there to where this is really an adoptable, pretty safe way to do business. So first question, why use variable rate nitrogen? Well, there's two reasons. I started off at Missouri working mainly on corn in my early years, and doing little small plot experiments on producer fields, and found out that the best rate was all over the place from one field to another. Some field needed zero and some field needed 300 and anything in between. And that's not very close to what people are actually doing in those fields. Then we started studying place to place within a field and found, you know, it's not even very close from one place in a field to another place in a field. And so if we're gonna get it right, we've got to find the places that need more, put more there, find the places that need less, and put less there. How are we going to do that? This kind of gives you some idea of where we started doing this with cotton. We had six experiments, and those six experiments, we had six different optimal N rates, ranging from 200 down to zero. Typical producer might put on 100, 110. And depending on what part of the country you're in, it might be a little different than that. But if you're putting on 100 and 110, how are you doing on these six fields? You know, not all that great in terms of hitting the target, because they're all over the place. And what you'd like to do is hit the target and put on about the best N rate in each one. And compared to a typical producer rate, I don't remember what I used, 100 or 110, putting on the correct rate on each of these six fields made $43 an acre if you got it exactly right. There was quite a bit of potential there to do something better. This is a corn example because I'm not aware that anyone has studied it in cotton, but what this is a field map, and every one of those little rectangles is a nitrogen rate experiment that received six rates going from zero to 250. And so we had the yields that went with each of those, and we could figure out how much it took to make full yield in each of those parts of the field. And you see all those light colored rectangles over on the western part of the field? That means pretty much that whole western part of the field needed less than 120 pounds of nitrogen to optimize profit. It was making 195, 200 bushel corn, but it all needed less than 120 pounds. And over on the east side, it was much more mixed bag. There's places over there that was making 12 bushels with no nitrogen and 180. And so the dark places needed more than 200. The lightest rectangles needed less than 80. That's both pretty far off from, I mean, this producer was putting on 180, and so there was substantial areas of that field that were way off from what the producer needed, and there was a complex pattern out there. We did eight fields like this, seven of them had this much variability. So that's corn, it's not cotton, but the other thing that we discovered in doing this is the reason is how much the soil is giving you. The dominant thing is not how much the crop needs, because this crop was pretty uniform in yield all the way across once you got it enough nitrogen. But the soil was giving you a whole lot of nitrogen over on the west half and giving you hardly anything in some parts on the eastern half of the field. And that was the reason. Well, if the soil is doing that, it doesn't really matter whether you're planting corn or cotton. The soil is still giving you a certain amount in a certain part of the field and something else somewhere else. And so I think this translates in that there's a need for putting more in fertilizer in some places and less in others, even in cotton. So some places need a lot of N and some places need it only a little. With a pretty high average yield for how much, it only took about an average of 120 pounds of nitrogen to make that. So that's my case for, here's why we need to do something to figure out where to put more and where to put less. What are we gonna do? And the reason I'm using sensors is I've done a whole bunch of research looking at trying to do something else, and all the other things I've looked at haven't worked very well. Nothing else has explained more than 25% of the variability in I need high here and low here, and color of the crop has explained generally between half and three quarters of that variability. It's not perfect. It's still gonna do the wrong thing sometimes, but it's a whole lot better than anything else that I have looked at in terms of targeting where to put more, where to put less. So, okay, if we can look at the color of the crop and make some decision about what we need to do, how are we gonna do that? And Jack mentioned you could do it. He's got the research showing it. You can do it in cotton with aerial photos, but you can't do it until about peak bloom, because that's when you got a good enough canopy to really see what's going on in that field. And then even if you could do it at a more opportune time, well, shoot, you get a cloudy day, you can't make an application map from a aerial photo taken on a partly cloudy day. And then you may have to wait for the plane to go up, and then it may take 2 days or it may take a week from the time the photo's acquired till you have an application map. So handheld sensors, that's too slow. And so to me, it comes down to, if you're gonna do this based on color, the applicator mounted sensors is the way to go, because they're immediate, they're making your diagnosis right then, they're turning it around immediately. And you can put those sensors down close to your crop and eliminate some of that problem with the soil interference, even when you don't have full canopy. And so they do better than the aerial photos, because you can easily cut out a bunch of that soil background interference. How are you going to interpret a sensor measurement? It's not necessarily that apparent. And if you talk to the people who are doing this, you'll see there's a bunch of different approaches out there. And you know, it's really obvious that it's not obvious, because everyone's doing it some different way. And so it's a crucial question, it's a tricky question, and it's one of the most important questions for the ongoing success of using this technology. The way we've done it, we go out, we measure. I showed you six fields where we had one field needed zero, another field needed 200, and we measure how much did this field really need by measuring the yield response curve, and how much did it take to get us up to the top of that thing, and let's put on that much and no more. And then let's do sensor measurements in those same fields, and then let's find that relationship between the sensor measurement and the best, most profitable rate, and then let's use that for predicting it in the future. That's been our approach. This is an example of how we've done it. This is a crop scan sensor, which is probably never gonna be an ag instrument, but we did several other sensors at the same time. So you can see the optimal N rates went from 0 to 200. A lot of them are there in the, you know, 50 plus or minus 50 range. And the higher the sensor reading was, the more nitrogen was needed. And what I'm saying is, take that equation, put it into your machine in the field, and use it to predict how much nitrogen you need from the sensor reading you got. Now, down here on the bottom of this graph, you'll notice that we've got the sensor reading relative to the high nitrogen plots. Now that's an obstacle, because that means you gotta have a high nitrogen plot to know what it looks like. And pretty much everyone who's done this has found that you kinda gotta have that. And you try to go away from it and it doesn't work. We've done tons of demos in corn, and when we had a poor reference area, that's when we lost money. And when we had a good reference area, we've made money for sure. So if you look at what Jack was showing you, it starts to make some sense. You look at how fast that sensor measurement on the same crop changes through time. He was showing, okay, early square, mid square, early bloom, full bloom, and it's just a straight line going up on the NDVI, if that's what you're looking at, for example. And you know, which day you measure, it's gonna be a different value for the same plant 2 days later than it was, you know. And so you've got to have some reference for what this crop should look like at this exact stage, because it's changing so quick, what it should look like if it's got enough nitrogen and for that genetics. But the stage is the biggest thing. You've got to capture something that's got enough nitrogen and it's at that stage, that height, and everything else goes off that. If it doesn't look as good as that, then you shoot some nitrogen to it. If it looks just as good as that high nitrogen area, you figure it doesn't need very much. We've studied three sensors, CropCircle 210, and I'm differentiating that because they've got a new model that's going to AgLeader, and the GreenSeeker and the CropScan. And all three of them gave pretty much equal quality predictions. Two are active and one is passive, but they could all be made to work successfully in the field. The passive one you could not use at night, but you can actually use it pretty much any time between 8 and 6. So it has a pretty long range of where it actually works. We did all these sensors at 10, 20, and 40 inches above the canopy. We found they all worked best at 20 inches above the canopy. Now, GreenSeeker and CropCircle will tell you, put it 40 inches up. They're going to tell you that based on doing tests on grass and carpet and stuff like that, and they got the most stable values putting it 40 inches away. But that doesn't have anything to do with what you want to use it for in the field. What you want to use it for in the field is to do a diagnosis. And the best diagnosis came from putting it closer, because that way you get rid of some of that problem with what the soil is doing behind it. You get it down closer and look more focused in on that plant. Now, early square is when we'd really like to be able to do this. We found that we got poor predictions from the sensors at that stage. We were pretty sure from some previous chlorophyll meter research, which is a little handheld meter, that we could make it work by early flower, but we really didn't want to wait that long. So we studied mid-square, which is about halfway between the two, and we found, yeah, we can be successful at that point. That's like 7 to 10 days after the first square shows up. By then you got pretty good predictability, and from then on to when the first flowers are showing up, you've not only got good predictability, but it's pretty much the same equation all the way through there. So you've got a 2 week window where you can just go. Now, it's not as wide a window as you'd really like to have, but it's a fairly wide window where you just do the same thing all along, and that kind of keeps it simple. Here's something that I want to emphasize because of the new sensors that are coming on the market. Different sensors need different equations. And here's the three that we studied on cotton, and you can see how different they are. I don't have I guess this thing might work as a pointer. Okay, if you've got a relative value of 1.5 here, with the GreenSeeker, you're putting on 100. With the CropCircle, you're putting on 130. With CropScan, you're putting on 175. Same reading from all three needs to give three very different recommendations. So the equation is very sensor-specific. And so some of these new sensors that are coming out that don't have much research behind them to figure out what the equations ought to be, that's an obstacle. So, on to the field scale demos. We have done a couple of those. We did our first one last year, and we did three fields this year. You can see we got some sensors mounted up there on the front. This is the CropCircle 210 sensors, but we also did two fields this year with the GreenSeekers, and they'll all work. They have different properties, but they're up on the front, and then we've got a computer in the cab that reads those sensors, calculates a rate from the equations that we developed in our research, the way I just showed you in the graph a minute ago, and then it directs a controller, and on a machine like this, that controller is changing the belt speed to make the rate go up and down. I'll just show you three fields from 2009. The producer had 25 pounds on pre, and his rate was 80, and that's these kind of light blue areas were all his 80 pound, and this is at mid square stage. He was putting on 80 on his parts, and then the variable rate, I don't have a scale on here, but dark blue means a low rate. I think we set our bottom rate at 50 maybe. And so the dark blue probably all got 50 at that mid-square stage. And then the brighter colors mean higher rates. So on the east end, we cut back by about 20 pounds, and there's just a couple areas here where we jacked it up. Here we put 50 on mostly the whole thing. And then over here, you'll notice that there's one streak through the middle here where we put a pretty high rate, even though we're putting low rates on the passes on both sides, and then up here in the northwest corner, we jacked it up too. So the average here was actually about the same as the producer rate, but it was radically redistributed to be in certain concentrated parts of that particular strip. Here's the yields and estimated profits, and let's see, over here, variable rate, we made about an extra 100 pounds of lint. Here we actually lost 80, and here we made about 180 extra pounds of lint. So it was, It was really over in that west part of the field that we really had our payoff. The rest of the field, we were pretty much break even, but in that western part of the field, we had a payoff to the variable rate. And another thing that was interesting in this field was that the all three reps, the variable rate had longer fibers and higher mic. And I don't know how to explain that, it's just what happened. In all three reps, fibers were longer, mic was higher. And I think it had something to do with the effect of nitrogen on maturity and the fact that in much of this field, the producer rate was a little bit above what that really needed and may have slowed down that maturity a little bit. Here's the other two fields. They're two 80-acre fields side by side. And you can see each field has two constant rate areas with the yellow. That's putting on a rate of 48 pounds of actual N. And over on the western edge, here we've got one where most of it's getting more like 25 or so, and then the area in the front here that's getting a pretty high rate. Total is about the same, just a radical redistribution. Same here, radical redistribution high in the south and low in the north mainly. Over in the east field, the sensors mostly cut back the total. A higher rate here along this east edge, and this one was pretty low everywhere except for this spot here in the middle. How did we come out of that? Here's an aerial photo of that field taken, I think, in mid-August. And over here, about the same. Here's where we really made a huge difference. We got about 400 extra pounds of lint with the variable nitrogen there. That was the one where we increased the rate some, but also radically redistributed where we put it. Cut back in most of that plot, but also increased a lot in the southern end of it. Over here, nearly the same. Here we actually came out about 100 pounds behind. This is really where it paid off. So in both of those fields that we worked in, it was in certain concentrated areas where we really got a payoff to doing this variable rate nitrogen with the sensors. And I don't know exactly how to explain that. I don't know what it was about those areas of the field that really made them the ones that stood out. Our outcomes, we increased yield over all those by average of 73 pounds lint per acre. The statistics say that there's a 72% chance that that is true. That means there's a 28% chance that that's kind of random chance because and the variability we had in there. We decreased N rate by 10 pounds per acre. Last year in our demo, we did a lot more, it was like more like 45. And overall, we increased profit by about $50 an acre with 80% confidence that that was real. So we don't have it nailed down. There's still a need. I thought I had another thing in there, but there's still a need for a lot more to nail down. How good are these? How often do they make money? How often do they not make money? But we got a start and it looked promising in actually doing this out in the field. So what are obstacles? One, it's not accurate at early square. We'd like to be doing that, but 7 to 10 days later is probably the earliest we feel we can make it work. Got to have a high-end reference area. That's a hassle. Sensor values drift over time, and that means the N rates change just because the sensor changed, even though the plant didn't change and still needs the same N rate. And finally, we got new sensors with limited research. I've got 5 minutes to go through those things. If you can't do it at early square, that narrows your window. Maybe you don't do your whole crop. You know, with the sensors, if you've got them, you just start doing it at early square anyway and get the fields done that you think have less variability and target the ones that have more variability for using the sensors. Or maybe you feel like you can get it all done. At early flower, there's good N rate prediction, but we've got some evidence that we've lost yield potential, especially if we didn't put on any pre. But even if we put on 50 pre and come back with the sensors at early flower, sometimes it looks like we've lost some yield potential. So you take a window that's narrowed on the front end, and maybe you're narrowing up a little on the back end too, because you'd really like to get it done before that early flower stage. High-end reference areas required. Well, it's a hassle. People really don't want to do this. They don't want to talk about it. logistics of getting farming done is already hard enough. You better have a good reason if you want to take on a whole nother operation where you have to go to every field with it. Here's what I think. I think you send a plane around. We had one guy who did, it was in corn, but he did every cornfield on his farm in about 2.5 hours with a plane doing that. You know, he made a phone call. He paid some money, but it wasn't all that much. It was a lot less than it would have cost him to do it personally if you pencil it out and have him drag his full-size equipment around to every field. So for people who are in areas where planes are pretty accessible, that really takes the pain out of it, I think. Sensor values drift over time. There may be some machine sensitivity issues, especially with the Green Seeker, which they pretty much say to me now, we think that's temperature sensitivity that we're dealing with, and they're trying to introduce a correction. Leaf wetness changes the value, so you get a little sprinkle or you go up with dew on the leaves. You got to accept the fact that that's going to change your sensor reading. You got to deal with that somehow. I'll talk a little bit about how to do that in a second. Plant geometry, you know, you get a hot day and the water can't keep up with the demand and the leaves start to droop. Well, that's going to change what the sensor is going to say. And it doesn't change how much nitrogen you ought to put on, so you got to have a way to deal with that. This shows you something about what we've measured. We put the sensors over the same plant all day long, and in this case it was Green Seeker sensors. That's NDVI, and we normalized it to solar noon, and we said, how much did it change? Well, pretty much every day, there's 8 days shown on there. It started off high, went low, lowest to midday, and then went back up again. That's where they think the temperature sensitivity is coming in. It gives a lower value of NDVI when it's hotter, and of course it's hotter in the middle of the day. So that may be what it is, it may be something else, but it certainly was changing in a very systematic way. And when you look at how much it changed the N rates, we said, okay, let's standardize it to 80 in the middle of the day. Well, in the morning, it was probably averaging 120, 130, and up to 110, 120 in the evening for the same exact plant, just because of how much the sensors drifted. So you gotta have a strategy for dealing with that, because you can't take a 40-pound error that's just because your sensors changed what it reads on the same plant. Really, it comes down to this. You got to keep updating those sensors with your high nitrogen value, because whatever's affecting, whether it's, you know, a sprinkle on the leaves or the leaves starting to wilt a little bit or anything like that, even the temperature sensitivity of the sensor, it's going to affect the reading on that high nitrogen area the same as everywhere else. And so you can still get a good relative comparison as long as you keep updating that often enough. I say at least every 2 hours, probably every hour if you're using a Green Seeker, and that's true if you're using the Green Seeker for picks or defoliant as well. You've got this shift in what number it's going to give you just over time. Here's what I think, and we've actually made this work. Put the high nitrogen area perpendicular to your rows and re-update every time you cross it. Here's an example that we did with corn. You can see a couple of darker streaks through those fields. This is knee-high corn. We programmed the machine to know exactly where those streaks were and to re-update what the value should be every time it crossed it. And it would average the last 4 times it had gone across it and use that as the current reference value. And that's going to take care of any of this stuff. It might take a little while if you get a sprinkle for it to catch up, because, you know, 4 times crossing it to get that new value. But that's one way to very simply keep that up. You could also just kind of plan spacing across fields. You know, every hour you hit a new one and you just take a new reading. But these crosswise reference strips with the plane, I think that would be a pretty simple way to take care of that problem. New sensors, AgLeader is releasing a sensor this year. Same designers, Crop Circle 210, AGCO and TopCon have one that's kind of in production, and it's the successor to a certain extent to the one that Jack uses, and it has that angled orientation. Both of these are probably going to be good sensors, but I'm saying I don't think they're really ready to go, and the reason is because we don't have much research for interpreting them. I think they're going to work fine. They're good machines, but we don't know how to turn a sensor reading into an N rate. Remember that graph I showed you, how different the lines were for the 3 sensors we studied? Well, we've got 2 new sensors coming in. Actually, what Crop Circle is doing with it, what AgLeader is doing with that new Crop Circle sensor, which uses completely different wavelengths, as far as I know, on their demo fields this year, they used our equation for that old Crop Circle sensor. Even though it's completely different wavelengths, that was their best guess of how to turn a sensor reading into an N rate, and I'm not happy with that. I'm not comfortable with that. I think it's going to be a good machine, but we need to know how it reacts, because each sensor is different. 9 seconds left. Optimal nitrogen rate varies widely between fields and within fields. If you're going to do some diagnosis, crop color is the most accurate way to do that, and the crop sensors are the best way to do that logistically. The translation from the sensor reading to the nitrogen rate is crucial and tricky and still up in the air. We have developed recommendation equations, and we've done 4 demo fields now, 3 this year. We made money at that this year. I hope we keep making money at it. I'm not sure that we will, but if I was betting on it, I'd bet that we'll continue to do better than the producer rate. More field testing is certainly needed. Substantial obstacles remain, but I think we're getting close to prime time for having a tool to get these nitrogen rates right. So thank you, and I don't know if we want to do questions or not.
Do you want to do a quick question, or I guess if you want to go to lunch, go ahead, but Peter will answer any questions you have for the next.
Wayne.
Peter, put a dollar figure where you got not counting sensor costs.
How many acres are you running?
One.
Okay, well, right now, I mean, The Green Seeker sensor has the drift problem, but that's the one that's most ready to go, I think, that's commercially available. You're talking about spending, say, $20,000. Right now it's about $23,000 for the 6 sensor set, $18,000 for the 4 sensor set. I think 4 is plenty. So you spend $18,500. You spend $18,500 on 1 acre, it's going to take you 17 lifetimes to make that money back. But if you run it over 1,000 acres and you make $50 an acre, which is not, I'm not guaranteed, and there's no guarantee of future performance, you know, like they say in the stock market, but if you made that, you know, in 1 year you'd pay for your sensors and setting the whole machine up for variable rate that hadn't been set up for variable rate, and have something left over to pay yourself for the trouble of figuring it out, you know, in 1 year if you ran it over 1,000 acres and did this well. Now, I'm thinking probably most of the time you're not going to do this well. But we've done a lot more of this in corn, and we're settling in somewhere in the $15 to $20 an acre range is what we come out ahead of the normal producer practice. And that's where the normal producer practice is to apply a fixed rate on the same day. Now, we've also made a lot of money just by people going into the season rather than having more pre-season stuff. How much possibility do you have using it for wheat, corn, and cotton? I think a great possibility. I mean, absolutely. And that's how you really make it easy to pay for it, I think, if you are moderately successful on multiple crops and have it running over a bunch of acres. We've done tons of it on corn. I'm very happy with what you can do there as long as the corn's at least a foot tall. Now, our people at Sidress want to start when it's that tall, and with guidance, they'll probably try to go when it's that tall. But we've made money on corn, and we're just starting to do wheat, but tons of other people have done a lot on wheat, and it's very well established, and in many ways it's the most natural fit because the canopy coverage is the best at a very good time to do it. And so I think you can do all three, and I think that really, for people who are growing multiple crops that you could use it on, really makes the economics work out better, for sure. I saw a hand over here. Question is, how do you know if it's caused by the nitrogen not being in the soil, or the nitrogen's there but it's not getting taken up because it's either too dry or too wet? Does that summarize it? If it's too dry, your reference strip will take care of it to some extent. You know, and this is one of it's a tricky thing. I mean, you'll certainly know if you see a color difference and it's too dry and it's all growing poorly, and you see a color difference in your high-end area that you put out there is greener and bigger, you still know there's a nitrogen factor going on. It makes things complicated as far as what do you want to do, because if you're already that stressed at that point of the season, maybe you don't want to invest that full amount of nitrogen on it. You have to put a high-end area in every field, absolutely. If you got 400 fields in 3 counties, you know, I mean, my thing was, I said, okay, you probably, the plane is the best way to get these done. Now, getting 400 fields done is still, even if you're just putting one strip on every field with a plane, it's going to take a while. But I mean, obviously running 400 fields takes a lot of field operations of every kind of machine you've got. In terms of the total amount of time you spend per field, it's going to be tiny compared to every other field operation if you send a plane to do it. I really feel you need to put a strip in every field because, you know, even something that's planted, you know, the next field over and it's the same genetics but it's planted 3 days later. Now, if it's the exact same genetics and planted the same day and it's two fields that are side by side, I'd probably feel okay about only one of them having that reference area. But especially planting date or how fast it's growing, you know, you can get yourself into hot water by using a reference strip from something that's 3 days ahead.
How large does your strip need to be?
How long does your strip need to be? We've done a lot of successful corn demos with just doing an area the size of this room. Because we were going there and getting it done by hand because the timing is really crucial. You got to have it at least a month before you want to do the application. We had a bunch of experiences where we got the producers or retailers or whoever to agree to do it because it was 4 hours away from home. And then they did it, but they did it 6 days before we wanted to come in and use the sensors, and that's not enough to get that high nitrogen boost in there. So we've done the small ones and been successful with them. I think that you've hit a can of worms again because I think there's a lot of room to get more sophisticated with them. I mean, we have done ones where we've gone out and we've had four strips in a field and we've actually done a map because the high-end reference isn't going to be the same exact color across the whole field. You get into a low wet spot, it's going to grow slower, it's not going to be as dark just because it gets darker as it gets bigger. And so it doesn't change the nitrogen status, it's just growing slower. And you know, you have a different expectation for that part of the field. So to get more sophisticated, you could make a map of expected color for the field from, you know, say four strips across the field. But do you really need that? I think if you've got one good area the size of this room and a well-selected area that's not, doesn't have a drainage problem, isn't, you know, better drained than the rest of the field, isn't compacted, you know, nothing weird about it, it's very average for the field, you can do fine with just that.
Assuming the strips are about 150% of the rest of the field, how much does it affect the bottom of the line, or how much is it affecting the average end rate that you're applying? You have two fairly wide strips coming in at 50%.
Say that again. Are you you talking about the high end reference that was crosswise? I'm sorry, Kevin, I'm still not understanding your question.
If you have two strips coming in on that field, and it did look like the strips are pretty wide.
Yeah.
If the strips are taking 5-6% area of the whole field, does it ever affect the...
Are you saying, is it going to affect the future, how future management of that field?
The average rate, or the total rate you're using to the field.
I see what you're saying. Are you saying that it's going to pull you up? I mean, his rate there was probably only, it was corn, and his normal rate is like 150, and I think he had 180, 190 in those strips, so he had 40 more than he would normally have, but in most of the rest of the field, most of our experience, which really comes largely from corn, you can mostly cut back. That's where you make most of your money, is by cutting back on nitrogen. And so if you cut back in 95% of the field and increase in 5% of the field, you're definitely going to come out still saving nitrogen. It's not a thing that prevents you from coming out ahead.
I utilize soil test data and grid sampling.
Right.
Utilizing calculated CNC values to make soil applied variable rate nitrogen applications.
Okay.
Has there been any research utilizing this imagery or this reflectance data on the field where soil applied variable rate nitrogen has been applied?
In other words, you're talking about there's a variable rate pre-application?
Sir?
You're talking about a variable rate pre-plant application? and then you want to come in and see if you can do this? Yeah, we've done that. I'm not aware of anyone that's used it for that. I think you could do that. We have done cases where it was variable rate pre, but it was not intended to be the only application. It was variable rate because it would say a variable rate DAP application, and with some urea thrown in or something. And then, you know, what they used to do was do their side dress and subtract that off and do a variable rate side dress just to give everything up to the same. And then we used the sensors on it and came out ahead. It did fine in accounting for the fact that some had more pre and some had less, but it was not evaluating a system where it was variable rate pre that was intended to be the whole program. I can't think of anything where I've seen someone doing that. But it seems like a reasonable thing to do.
It would be useful data.
Yeah.
A lot of my growers put out a variable rate pre-plant and then use a consistent side dress with rates.
Right.
And I go through tens of thousands of soil points annually. And I'm looking at cotton grasses utilizing a 60-unit side dress.
Yeah, well,
the variation that you're showing in your slides are on all the fields that you looked at. I have that variation in one field.
Right. I agree. And I think that, you know, in many ways, you can use a sensor to say, did we even that out with our pre-application? But I'm much more interested in saying, can we use the sensor to build on what we did with the pre-application to fill the rest of it out right? Right. Now, one thing that a lot of people want to do is they want to run across and decide, okay, I need zero or I need 40 more. Our experience as a sensor isn't very good for that. It's good at telling you low, medium, and high. It cannot tell the difference between low and zero. It can't tell you this crop needs zero and this crop needs 30. So, you know, really, you know, maybe the sensor can tell you 30, 70, 110, you know, and get low, medium, and high good. Well, if you've already put on 70, that's not much use to you. But if you put on 30, 30, 70, and 110 are all reasonable numbers for what you might still need. And so if you put on too much pre, you kind of cut yourself off at the knee as far as being able to save any nitrogen with the system that we're using. Because we're always going to put on a minimum of 30 because our research says even when it looks exactly like the high nitrogen area, there's enough times when it runs out sometime later that we're going to put on 30. That's our average that we need if it looks exactly like the high-end crop. And so, you know, probably on cotton, 50 would be the most you'd want to do pre and still make this work. Something like 30 would be give you a little more room to make money with it. And, of course, if you're doing variable rate, you know, I think any, you know, probably 20 to 50 would be fine as a pre, and you should be able to compensate for, you know, take that into account with the sensor measurements as you're doing your side dress.
Well, there's no more.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Peter.